Now you know why we're here. So if you have any doubts or reservations, now is the time to say so. No one will think any less of you. Because once you enter this family, there's no getting out.
I want to make him an offer he can't refuse.
I'm a guy who does his job. He must be the other guy.
What are you looking at, butthead? Say hi to your mom for me.
Where are you? I'm in a glass case of emotion!
Babies are one of my many areas of expertise. Growing up, I performed my own circumcision.
Let's get started.
All right, welcome to the Jones Zone podcast. It's Chris and Brian. Brian,
what's up? What's up?
And we are here with Trey Nance of Nance Law.
Hey guys, how are you?
Good. How are you doing today, man?
All right.
Trey is a local attorney here. He handles a lot of our real estate closings, and we love using his firm. Him and his staff do an amazing job. So, Trey, if you don't mind, just kind of tell us a little bit about your practice and your story, where you got started and all that.
Sure. The York County area, Fort Mill, Rock Hill, all that, for me, when I was growing up, was always the gas stop at the border between Charlotte and Charleston.
Yeah.
And I really didn't know all that much about it. Graduated law school, and a professor put me in touch with an attorney up here in Rock Hill, who also has a real estate firm, put us together about a year after I graduated, which is 2008, which is a fantastic time to come out of law school. And then made the decision to go into real estate, which was even more
perfect timing for that.
Yeah, 2009 was perfect time to do that. Came up, built a practice there, did special projects and general counsel type stuff with the real estate company, and ended up there for 5.5 years. Opened my own practice 3 years ago, this coming June, so that's been a whirlwind. And here I am, here I be.
How long were you a real estate agent?
I was never a real estate agent.
Oh, I thought you said you were.
No, I never got a license. What I did was I had two business cards. I had one which was an attorney card,
okay,
and the other which was general counsel and special projects, which is commercial development, things of that nature, and also keeping agents out of trouble. And, which at that time you had the 2010 RESPA changes. You had a lot of the changes to the HUD, the small changes. Then you've had recently the big changes, making sure that ethics and laws were being complied with, and if there were any weird questions, as there often are, and I encourage a lot of agents that we work with now to call me with that, even if it's not something that we're working on. If you have something that comes up, you have a question about a listing, something in title that doesn't look right, fixing that or coming up with solutions to that, facilitating the transaction for the company, basically.
Yeah.
Cool. What about some personal stuff? Did you grow up in Charleston?
I grew up Lincolnton, if you know where that's at.
North Carolina?
Yeah. North Gastonia, south of Hickory. It's kind of the little stop on 321.
What was your high school?
Another gas.
Lincolnton.
How many kids in that?
I think when I graduated, we were just barely 2A schools, something like 900 kids there.
Okay.
So there were not a very big school, not a very big town.
Is it bigger than Clover?
Probably, yeah. Clover's got a couple thousand kids.
Clover's a big school now.
Yeah.
So did the school thing there. Got down to Charleston. Mom was a Marine brat. So there was they spent some time in Charleston back when there used to be a naval base there.
I was born at that naval hospital.
Yeah.
Were you really?
Yeah.
At the naval one?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And the Air Force Base is still down there, and of course they do have some naval stuff down there still, and there's a couple of Marines down there still, but that's where mom's family passed through Charleston. And so after I graduated from high school, I got down to the beach as quickly as possible, and amazingly graduated from the College of Charleston in 4 years, which is anybody knows anything about College of Charleston, CNC, knows that's pretty hard to do, especially if you're a guy.
Yeah.
With the weather and all that. And then made the decision to go to law school right afterwards. I was talked into that.
What's up with your phone?
Let me check it. Y'all
continue. Did some journeyman work after graduating from law school for about a year, and then ended up in Rock Hill and have stuck. But Charleston, I was down there for a good long while. Have a lot of people down there, know a lot of people down there. We have an office down there on Broad Street.
Broad Street bully.
Yeah. Well, and I was just joking. Everybody that went to law school or is a lawyer down in Charleston wants to have a Broad Street address. It's just, there's no escaping that. Mm. It's kind of there's a vanity involved. I'm not too proud to admit that. But that's a practice that's a little different from what we have up here. It doesn't involve a whole lot of real estate, mostly commercial stuff, a lot of leasing, things of that nature. Whereas up here, it's a little more transactional. We do a lot of residential up here. Of course, you guys know us for that. In addition to the business and the estate planning and all that other stuff. So.
Cool. All right, so let's get into a little bit about
what a closing attorney does. Would you say you do?
What is it you say you do here? What does an attorney do in a real estate transaction? Right? I know legally we have to use you guys, so what all do you guys
do? Yeah, that's the South Carolina Lawyer Employment Security thing. And I will preface this with saying that each state is very different. We're right here on the border with North Carolina. North Carolina roles for attorneys, slightly different from South Carolina roles for attorneys when it comes to real estate, particularly residential real estate. That being said, functionally, they're kind of the same. So what do we do? Most other states call it a title company or settle through a title company. South Carolina, and that's what I'll speak to, requires a licensed South Carolina attorney supervise, and that's a very legally defined term, all real estate transactions. And that encompasses a couple of different areas of the transaction, everywhere from reviewing the title, creating an opinion on that, recording documents at the courthouse, supervising the actual transaction with the borrower. And so what we do functionally is we take the purchase contract that you guys negotiate. Mm-hmm. Once it's signed and ratified, it lands on our desk. We look at it, make sure everything meets legal standards that it's supposed to meet. Everything's completed the way it needs to be completed. So in that respect, it's kind of a backstop against your brokers in charge and making sure that we're addressing all the needs that need to be addressed. Is there personal property involved? Is there not? Is there an easement that's conveying? Is there not? Is there a right-of-way that we have or a shared driveway? If it's a townhome or a condo, are we talking about the common elements and things like that? Is everything accounted for that needs to be accounted for in the transaction itself? Then, if it's being financed or if it's a cash purchase, it's a little bit different. If it's being financed, we'll get a title order or a request from the lender asking us to review the title. And that basically means we're looking at the history of that piece of dirt for a minimum of 50 years back.
Wow.
A lot of people, when they're buying new construction and things like that nature, they're going, well, the house has only been there for 3 years or whatever, so it should be that complicated.
Yeah.
You don't realize the dirt itself has been there for a lot longer.
Yeah.
depending on where you stand on things, it's been there for 6 billion years or 6,000 years or whatever. But for our purposes, we're only going to go back to 1776 or whatever, or in our case in South Carolina, 1670. So we don't go back that far. We have gone back to mid to late 1800s, depending on the property and the history of the property, because we have to go back to a clear general warranty deed.
So how do you do that?
We go to the courthouse, and all dirt lawyers, we're real estate attorneys, dirt lawyers, are to some extent historians. You have to be.
Yeah.
So we go back and we'll pull the deeds, we'll check all the deeds, we'll check all the previous owners for tax liens, judgments, other judgment liens of record, rights of way that they may have granted, parcel conveyances that they may have granted. Sometimes it comes into really big tracts from family farms, especially out western York County or down towards Chester and Lancaster County and all that. And we pull all those deeds. We search all those people. We check all their interests. And we go back until we have what we feel is a clean thing. Sometimes that involves us going to probate court, checking the estates, making sure that everybody was supposed to get under the will, got under the will. Weren't any children or wives that were left out. This does happen sometimes. And make sure that the property is free and clear. There's nothing, that the buyer is getting the dirt that they bargained for. It's really the best way to say that. Once we have that, we then work with the lender to put together all the invoices that you guys generate from the inspections and the termite and all the stuff, that all the busy work for the
fun stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure all that's been paid to make sure there's no mechanics liens that get paid on the property, which is also an issue.
So can you explain to the listeners what a mechanics lien is?
So a mechanics lien, very briefly, is anybody that does work on a piece of property and they don't get paid, they can lien the property.
Yeah, if they don't get paid.
If they don't get paid. Right. And that becomes an interest like a judgment or a mortgage, and they can execute on that like a judgment or a mortgage. To ensure that they get paid. That can also prevent the sale of the property if you're the seller.
Wow.
So 9 times out of 10, you guys know this, we pay the repairman at closing. And most contractors that do work with us, they understand that. That way, number one, you guys and the buyers are insured that it's being paid. And me, from a title perspective, I'm sure that it's getting paid too. So I don't have any liens that pop up. Then we conduct the closing. And that's usually when people see us. Which is a great thing about our business, and a kind of a bad thing about our business is that we're kind of the Wizard of Oz. We're the man behind the curtain.
Yeah.
Really, and I say this kind of jokingly, most buyers don't hear from us until right before closing or at closing. And they don't want to hear from us until right before closing or at closing, because if they do, it usually means it's a problem. So they see us, sit down, we go through the documents, we explain the loan package, we get everything signed, we get everything notarized. Cut the checks, most importantly, give out the keys, most importantly, and then get everything recorded. So without getting too detailed on the title insurance, which I'm sure we're going to talk about. But.
How long does a real estate transaction take for you guys? Like, if someone bought it with cash, what's the quickest they could close?
The fastest that I've closed a cash transaction is 4 days. And good, that's the time to get the contract fully ratified. Title search done, which is can be a big ask in that period of time, closed and of record.
Very cool. So who hires or chooses the attorney in a transaction?
I have very strong opinions about that, and I'm glad that you asked. The choice of the attorney is reserved to the buyer or the borrower by statute in South Carolina. That is often misunderstood. Now, if you're going to go buy from a builder, one of the many tract builders we have, one of the many lovely subdivisions in the area, they're going to have language in their contract where you're going to require you to use, they want you to use their bank, they want you to use their title company, use their guy, and that's fine. And some you can negotiate that sometimes you can't. But the closing attorney primarily, and it's some ethical discussion on that, primarily represents the buyer and the borrower, because they're the ones that are most invested in the transaction. It's very easy to be the seller. They come in, they sign a couple of affidavits, they sign a deed, they get their check, give the keys, and they're done, more often than not. And they're entitled to their own attorney if they want that, and we do seller side representations on occasion. But more often than not, we're primarily looking at the buyer. So the buyer has the choice of the attorney. It's reserved to them. That's on all real estate transactions, refinances, lines of credit, new purchases, whatever. It's the buyer's choice to choose that attorney. It's very hard to tell the difference between the attorneys sometimes. And so we do get a lot of conversations, and I encourage that. There's nothing wrong with second opinion. There's nothing wrong with asking questions, because not every law office is built for everybody. You know, tract builders have very different needs. If you're buying from a True Homes or a Standard Pacific or Cal Atlantic, whatever they are now, if you're buying from one of them, your needs are going to be very different from if you're buying, you know, a pre-existing construction or something like that. And everybody works a little differently. Our offices, we have everybody that I know in our local bar that does real estate. They're all very talented. I don't have any issues with any of them. We all work very well together. We're all very cooperative, very collegial, which is awesome because it's not like that everywhere. But we all have our strong points. We all have our weak points. We all have our specialties that we do. Not everybody does commercial work, for example. Not everybody has the capacity to do commercial work or the E&O to do the commercial work. And there's some complications that come out of things. There's estates involved, or you have, you know, deceased parties that are on title, or things like that that can be complicated.
If there's drama after the transaction, can you guys handle that, or is that like a conflict of interest? Like if you work the deal, if you were part of the closing, can you handle stuff like that?
Well, and this is where it gets, again, I have very definitive opinions about this, and there is some disagreement in the bar, and as a practical matter, most closing attorneys, should I differentiate from attorneys who do closings? Most closing attorneys say, we're on the deal, we're deferring ourselves, we're going to step back from it, because one, legally, we have a knowledge of all the parties involved. Two, from a practical matter, we have done business with all the parties involved, so we're not going to prejudice ourselves against any of the people that may be involved on one side or the other. Strictly speaking, depends on the transaction. Since, in my opinion, the primary duty goes to the buyer. If we have to enforce a contract to closing, or compel a contract to closing, or however you want to, the carrot and the stick, we'll do what we can. At least for our office, our policy is we'll do what we can to get the deal closed, because that's the ultimate goal of everybody. The seller wouldn't have signed the contract if the seller didn't want to sell. The buyer wouldn't have signed the contract if the buyer didn't want to buy, generally speaking. And so we try to just get everybody on the same page with that. And sometimes that takes some explanation. Sometimes that takes a stick. Sometimes that takes a carrot. After the transaction, usually the parties are done. Yeah. Purchase contracts, though, survive the transaction. A lot of people don't understand that. That goes with tax prorations and making those items accrued up on the amounts when something comes out. And we can talk about taxes in a second if you want to.
I would love to.
I know, it's exciting, isn't it? Who doesn't want to talk about taxes?
How long do you have to keep your files for? You just said.
I think the legal requirement is something like 7 years.
Seven years.
As a policy, we don't destroy it because dirt doesn't go away. Now, some of the ones that have snakes in them, we put them in a quiet part of the storage bin because we don't want to wake them up. But
sleeping dogs.
Love. Yeah, let that one go.
What is an expression, I guess.
But yeah.
All right, cool, man. What is a deed stamp?
So a deed stamp. So deed stamps nowadays are different from what they used to be. It is a transfer tax. It's an excise tax. Depends on what state you're in, and it's all the same thing. Deed stamps used to refer to actual physical stamps when you go to the registry of deeds office, and they would actually look at the price of the property, determine what the tax is, and you actually buy physical stamps, and you would actually put them like on an envelope, put them on the deed, and they would record it.
Oh, okay.
Of course, everything's technological now. It's digital now, so you go and they figure it up. And so that's basically the tax the seller pays to sell the property. The tax is based off the purchase price and consideration on the property.
Isn't it like $2.50 per $1,000?
$3.70 per $1,000 in South Carolina. Yep. And that's both on the state and the county level. They roll it all into one.
Gotcha.
So it's one fee, $3.70 per $1,000. That's what it rounds out to. Okay. But under statute, that is a seller expense. Now, of course, you can negotiate that in the contract too.
So you mentioned seller expense. In terms of the closing statement and all that sort of stuff, what are typical expenses on the seller side, and what are typical expenses on the buyer side?
Vastly different. Yeah. Very big number differences. So sellers, again, it's very easy to be the seller. It's kind of an ism that I throw around the office quite a bit. Seller, all they have to do is really just show up. When the buyers compile the contract, they're entitled to nothing but the contract proceeds. That's it. So they show up, sign a deed, give the keys, and get a check or a wire. The seller expenses are very minimal as a result. Their biggest one is the commissions on the sale.
Yeah.
That's by and large the largest expense that they're going to have. Other than that, there's a deed preparation fee. There's the deed stamps, the transfer tax. Maybe a wiring fee if we have to wire a payoff,
yeah.
Or overnight a payoff. And really, that's it. Deed preparation, because an attorney has to prepare the deed. An attorney has to record the deed. So the
attorney has to get paid.
Well, generally speaking, that's the way it works. Not always. but that's tend to how that works. So sellers are super easy. You're not looking a whole lot of money on seller side. Buyers are very different. Buyers, you have all your bank fees if you're getting financing, and that can be points, that can be origination fees, that can be application fees, and you have appraisal fees, escrow deposits, interim interest. For the attorney's part, there's a couple more on there. We simplify our fee structure. Some attorneys itemize things out very specifically and have like 18 different fees. I found that to be confusing. So we kind of lump everything to just a handful of fees. You have your attorney fee, you have administration fee, which includes all of your overnight stuff, all of your document stuff, all the copy fees, all the stuff that comes with doing the file. And then your title fees for your title insurance policy. And that is a number that's based off of statute or based by the company that we're underwriting with. And it's very tightly regulated, so there's not a variation a whole lot from one title insurance underwriter to another for Fidelity to Investors or Old Republic or whoever you write with.
Okay.
So how's everybody acclimating to the TRID, the new TRID laws?
Funny that you should ask. and it's going to be interesting to see what happens with the new Congress. Because the TRID laws and CFPB in total is a product of the Dodd-Frank Act, or Dodd-Frank bill that was passed. As that itself was passed in the previous Congresses, as a result in response to the housing crisis, the financial crisis.
Right.
There's a lot of good that comes with it. There's a lot of bad that comes with it. During the comment period, South Carolina Bar Real Estate Section wrote a very lengthy opinion to CFPB about the new TRID disclosure and the guidelines. I myself wrote a fairly lengthy letter that was very similar about it.
Was
there's
it
a lot
strongly worded?
It was very lawyerly.
Lawyerly.
It was a lawyerly opine. But
I have no idea what that.
Yeah, I'm trying to come up with more.
Another
SEC,
expression.
I'm trying, more SAT words, more like SAT. Like Michael Baker had. basically, parts of the document, the TRID disclosure itself, I like is the first page. It's a really good summary of this is what you borrow, this is your rate, this is your monthly payment, this is your escrows.
Yeah.
That's really all that people care about. What am I paying each month? Everything else, they really don't care. Now, the old HUD, for all of its problems, and it was a confusing document to a lot of people that didn't do it a lot, it was an accounting form. It was very easy to read. It made sense. The TRID form is not. Some of the TRID process, there's some good with it. There's a lot that I don't like about it either, and I'm sure if you've talked to other loan officers or other people in the mortgage side of the industry, they have opinions about that as well. The compliance concerns fines and penalties that some of the lenders are exposed to, I think, are a little ridiculous. As a result, their compliance and risk management people get really wound up and clamp down on it. And that's what we saw for the first year after it implemented in October of last year. October of 15. And so that got some that chilled underwriting to an extent, which kind of chilled some of the mortgage origination and made it very difficult. Because it really all starts when you go back to your loan officer and they give you a loan estimate when they take your application. That's what kind of drives the train moving forward. So we can make some changes, we can make some corrections, and we'll get it together after that. But that's kind of the boundaries that we're in. It's not a bad thing. Consumer disclosure is not a bad thing. But there's a lot within the process and within the industry that's simply unpredictable. We don't know how extensive the title search is going to be. Yeah. Well, we don't know how expensive the title search is going to be. We don't know if there's going to be a survey that's required. Sometimes we get one, sometimes we don't. So that may be another expense. You're talking, $400 to $600 on that a buyer may not be aware of. And all that kind of factors into what their cash to close is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And if the numbers are tight, and they're looking at FHA or USDA or something like that, where they're putting the minimum amount down and they still have it, then it's not unforeseeable that we'll get close to closing or week before time. We're looking at cash to close and it's just not there. And all of a sudden, everybody's put in all this effort. The bank's put in this effort. You guys have put in this effort. And the listing agent's put in this effort. And we're not closing. And if it doesn't close, nobody gets paid. And that's the other part of all this, is that the broker for the loan company doesn't get paid. The lender doesn't get paid. The agents don't get paid. The attorney doesn't get paid. The title company, nobody gets paid except for the people who did repairs on the deal until it closes. So everybody has a vested interest in getting it moved forward. So I try to take a more cooperative team approach to that. And we try to get out in front of it, at least for our office. We've been very communicative with a lot of the loan officers that we work with. We try to stay in regular touch with those loan officers and lenders so that they have an idea of what our fees are. We have an idea of where they're going. So we try to get as much as possible correct and in line beforehand so we don't have any of those problems later on.
Now, you mentioned that oftentimes you don't see the buyer until closing day.
Yeah.
So who are you guys working primarily with? Because you how often do you work with the lender? Is that your primary...
The primary point of contact that we have throughout most of the transaction is the processor, because nobody can talk to the underwriters at the lender. We can talk to the processor, the loan officer, and the agents. That's the primary people that we talk to throughout the transaction. Our office, we try to go out of the way to make contact with the buyer and the seller directly so they at least know who we are. And they can call us directly with any questions, and we're happy to talk to them because that's who primarily we're working for. But by and large, buyers, especially if they're borrowing money from a finance deal, they're going to get inundated with emails and paperwork and this, that, and the other. We need this financial statement or this bank statement for the 14th time. So they don't want to hear from us any more than they have to. So we're trying to make the process for them as easy as we can. More often than not, that means we stay out of the way. We just talk with you guys. More often than not, you guys already have the relationship with them. So you know your buyer or your seller because you work with them for 6 months or whatever. you tend to know them better than we do, unless they're an existing client. So we kind of rely on you for that personal relationship as we try to build that relationship with them ourselves.
Right.
So,
cool, man. Carl Patterson commented.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know the Bradley Patterson team.
Yes.
He said, let me find it, Janine. He would have dinner with Janine. He said, an awesome podcast, and he would have Judge Janine. Do you know her?
Who is Judge Janine?
I don't know. Carl. I have to Google that.
Judge Janine. I don't know who that is.
I'd go with Judge Judy if I went. Well, would
no,
you,
I'd go with Judge Joe Brown.
Judge Joe Brown.
He's funny.
Is he fun?
He's fun.
Yeah, he is fun.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
All right, we haven't even mentioned that. Today's poll question is, because we're doing a Facebook Live with this,
what'd I say?
Not what, I said watch. That was a mispronunciation.
Swatch.
Do you want me to read off the question?
No.
You're in trouble?
Okay. Go ahead. Which TV judge would you like to have dinner with?
Now keep in mind, it doesn't have to be a legal judge. It could be a judge like on a competition. American Idol type deal.
Wait, Judge Wapner. Is Judge Wapner, is he even still alive?
Who's Judge Wapner?
Judge Wapner. He's the original People's Court.
Oh, yeah, the Baldhead dude.
Baldhead guy?
No, that's Night Court.
That's a TV show.
And he wouldn't even judge. He was like the deputy or something. So, do you do anything other than real estate law?
Yes. You know, residential real estate specifically gets all the attention because that's all the noise. We get a lot of people in there, the office, with that. On a regular basis, think buyers and sellers on each side. We do a fairly healthy amount of transactions each month, so that's a lot of people that come through the office.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. We also do commercial real estate, both purchases, development, commercial leases. We do business and corporate stuff, so forming an LLC or an Inc., running, buying, selling, contracts that come with that, employment agreements that come with that. All the stuff that comes with running a business that may come up, all the legal needs that may come up, anything you need reviewed, we can do that. And then we do estate planning, so wills, trusts, things like that. The way I characterize it, what we don't do is if you file bankruptcy, you get arrested, you get divorced, don't call me. I don't know anything. I can't help you with that.
So did you...
Call my lawyer.
Did you have a...
I'll give you a referral.
Did you have like a real estate specialty in law school? Or is
no.
that... Do you have to do like continuing ed? Or how's
we
that
have
work?
To do a tremendous amount of continuing ed each year just to maintain the license. I tend to over qualify on that, mostly because most of the real estate conferences tend to be fairly long conferences, so you can bank time anyway.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
But yeah, we have to do that as it is.
I wish we could use our team meeting hours at Keller Williams for continuing education.
That'd be awesome. Speaking of which, we're gonna...
Hey, you're always investing in knowledge. That's
right.
Always a good
That's
thing.
Right.
It's the tuition of life.
We're not wasting time by any means.
No,
I'm just saying. It'd be nice to...
To get the credit for the learning? Yeah.
I'm just saying. Maybe we can...
I get what I pick up what you're putting down.
How much is it to do an LLC? I'm interested in that.
So LLCs can be anywhere. If it's a single member, it's super simple. You're looking at a few hundred dollars to get that done. If you're going to have partners in it, it's like anything else. The more complicated, the more expensive it is. Our fee structure, I tend to take a very strong view against the hourly rate. I do not like the hourly rate. I don't think it's a fair and equitable form of billing when you talk with attorneys. Now, sometimes it's unavoidable. That's the only way we can keep track of it. But for most things, like we can have a conversation. We'll have an initial talk. I get an idea of what you need. I have an idea of what my time investment is going to be. So I'll assign a value to that and say, this is kind of what you're charging out at. So you know up front. I know up front. Very easy. And that way, I don't have to watch the clock. I do the work. And the more I can focus on the work rather than trying to bill you, the better the work's going to be and the happier you're going to be.
Yeah.
You're not going to get hit with some $2,500 bill for something that's simple because we've exchanged a lot of emails and phone calls. That's, to me, is nonsense.
If I set up an LLC, is that just a one-time thing? You don't have to maintain that or anything, do you?
South Carolina, well, it depends on the state that you register it in. South Carolina, there's no ongoing reporting requirements. So once you set it up, really your ongoing expenses are maintaining the corporate book and the taxes.
What about a trademark? If I come up with a cool catchphrase,
If it's super simple, we can help you with that. With intellectual property, patent law, particularly that patent practice is a whole separate specialty, and that's a whole separate bar specialization and all that. Trademarks and service marks, we can help you with. Got a couple clients we're doing that for right now. We have done that for people in the past. Either we can advise you on the application process or we can do it for you. But yeah, that's something that if you do have it, it's protected by common law, not to get way in the weeds here, when you create it. But it's only protected in the area that you're doing the business in. If you want nationwide protection, you want something that's kind of bona fide, you do the registration. Yeah, you're thinking old brother, aren't you?
Yeah. He's bona fide.
He's a suitor.
Oh, man. Good stuff. Yeah, Carl posted a picture of Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Oh, that's the chick from Fox News.
Yeah, okay.
Judge Jeanine.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know that I have... I can deal with her. She's strong. Huh?
Is Nancy Grace a judge? She's not.
She used to be a prosecutor.
Lord.
So she was an attorney. Mm.
She is an attorney, I believe.
You do any family law stuff?
Do not. Run away from that as much as possible. I've been roped in on that as a expert on real estate and business matters. In family business, somebody gets divorced, I've split that up and how to unwind the business or allocate the business. Same thing with real estate. Rarely do I get involved in that. I try to stay away from family court as much as possible. That is a skill set in a patience level that I do not personally possess. So.
Where'd you get that suit?
This suit?
Listening to the podcast, you can't see it, but it's sharp.
Past life, when I was in Charleston, I worked at a men's clothing store, a tailor shop. I did that for 8 years.
We got a guy. We need to hook him up with Sean.
Rashawn, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yeah, right over Sean. Yeah.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, yeah.
Thornton? Mm-hmm. Yeah, cool, man. Yeah, he's got...
He's got that. He's I'm wearing pleated pants. I had no idea.
I got jeans and...
I had no idea pleated pants were out of style until about 2 hours ago.
Hey, your style is your style.
Someone said something to you?
Yeah, yeah. Why are you wearing pleated pants?
What's up with the pleated pants, bro?
I was like, I don't know, man. What do you mean? I was like, they're $12 at Target.
Yeah, they're so 2010. Ridiculous. Let's see. What else, man? You got? Do you have anything specific you want to talk about and share about your practice or what's going on with you guys?
Well, is this the one thing that I get really soapboxy over is choice of the attorney. And people, a lot of times they get pushed around on that and they don't realize that they do have a choice.
Yeah.
And they just go with whoever their banker says or you know, whoever the builder says or whatever. But I encourage people, you know, the choice of the attorney, and you're not just... We all do kind of the same thing. Ultimately, the process is the process, and the legal outcome is going to be a recorded deed. That's what we're dealing with here. But everybody has their own way to do it. And so I encourage people to look around, ask around. Talk to the people in the office. Talk to the attorney. Mm-hmm. Most importantly, talk with your agent. If you're a buyer and you have an agent, their job is to do this. They do this several times a month. You as a buyer may do it every 7 to 10 years.
Yeah.
And the way that it was done 7 to 10 years ago is wholesale different from the way it is now.
Yeah.
You know, our goal as an office is to not make it appear that way to you. If you're the buyer or the seller and you're coming to do a closing, it's supposed to be as low impact and as easy as possible. It's not always the case, but that's the goal. On the back end of it, on the back office of it, where us as the vendors and the agent and all that, where we work, it's a different space from what it was even 3 years ago. And it will continue to evolve as regulations continue to evolve and the practice evolves and the risk practices for the lenders evolve. That's going to be a very dynamic space in what used to be a very static industry. For a long time, real estate closings were kind of what they were. And people have been doing it for a very long time. It's not much change in their practices. It is what it is. It's not that way anymore. Of course, you can say that about a lot of businesses. It's been disrupted in the process, in the use of technology, in the expense of technology that all comes with that. Some of it's good, some of it's bad, but it is what it is, and that's the world that we live in, so you have to adapt and kind of each roll with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. We usually give people... 2 or 3 choices and just, you know, hop online, see which one, you know, if they prefer, you know, a female or whatever they go with.
Well, and more than just looking at the website, have a conversation with them, give them the call. You know, there's, and again, there's no bad choices in our local bar, in York County.
Several local bars to attend to there.
Yeah.
There's
hobos. but, you know, you're not going to make a bad choice. And I know location's a big deal for some people. You know, for our purposes, a lot of people don't know that. We can accommodate closings in Fort Mill. If we need to do that, people don't want to make the 10-minute drive across the river, which sometimes that's the case. But we do have a practice statewide. We've closed things in Greenville. We've closed things, of course, in Charleston. We have the office down there. Cleaning things in Horry County. We tend to stay away from Hilton Head because that's complicated. But really, Hilton Head is as its own self has assessments, and yeah, it's complicated.
Hilton Head people.
I want
to
tell you.
Well, it's the county and the city. It's complicated there. So we tend to leave that to the people who practice there locally because they know it best. But yeah, we practice statewide, both residential and commercial. Typically residential, we focus on the Tri-County area because this is where we're at. And most people, it's easy to drive here. But we've got one we're closing in North Augusta. It's an active file right now. We've closed things over in Aiken. And
are you licensed in North Carolina?
I am not licensed in North Carolina. I do have enough counsel attorney that we can refer to.
Okay.
We're working on that, so stay tuned.
Yeah.
Listeners, for that.
Is there a reciprocity for that, or do you have to sit for their bar?
Not
or?
In South Carolina. You have to sit for the bar. South Carolina does not play well with others.
Really?
It's one of a handful of states where there's no reciprocity. Yeah.
So,
yeah. Okay, once you're in South Carolina, you're kind of stuck in South Carolina, which is a fantastic and beautiful place to be.
Which is a beautiful place. God's grace.
But the other part of it is, like I said, you know, residential real estate gets all the noise, gets all the attention. That's what people kind of know us for. But the commercial part of it, if you're a business owner, you're wanting to lease a space. Very important to at least put eyes on the lease, even if we can't change it, for you to understand what it is. It's very easy for a layperson to take a 72-page commercial lease and go, well, I can read through this and understand it. There's a lot that's very specific and a lot you may not think about. You know, my job is the difference between legal services at your direction, like one online service says, most people don't know the direction they need to go. They don't know the questions they need to ask. It's not about finding the answers. It's about making sure you ask the right probative questions. So that's what we bring to the practice with both the business formation, the business transactional stuff. All of that is to provide a sounding board for people to discuss and understand what they're getting into, even if they don't need us to do the work specifically, we're at least there as a resource for knowledge.
Thanks, man. Cool. One last question. What did you have?
I was just going to say question of the day, Tom.
No, I had one other question about taxes.
How do you guys
come up with the property taxes and how do they split it?
It's very important for the listeners.
Because buyers and sellers sometimes are like, what do I got to pay the property taxes?
That is a point of contention. Taxes? Yeah. Property taxes are always in South Carolina. It's complicated. Property taxes are a lien on the property. Period. It's one of the only liens that takes in front of another income tax lien. Takes in front of a mortgage, regardless if it's a purchase money mortgage or anything like that. Property taxes are the first thing in line, and they have to be dealt with. Now, during the first three quarters of the year, we have to operate off the most recently published tax bill. That's usually in South Carolina the previous tax year. Those taxes are in arrears in South Carolina.
Mm-hmm. Can you explain to them real quick what in arrears is?
Okay, so when the tax bill comes out in South Carolina, it comes out around October. So this past October, October of 16, you got a tax bill if you own a piece of property. That tax bill was for tax year 16. You're not paying taxes for the year coming up. So if you pay a tax bill, it's due actually in 5 days. It's January 15th. If you got a tax bill in October, it's coming up. It's due now. If you haven't paid it, pay it. That is not for the year coming up. That's not for 17. That's for the year previous. That's for year 16. So we split off the most recently published tax bill. So for the first three quarters of the year till around October, we use the previous tax bill because that's the only good data that we have. And we prorate based off of that. So the seller pays for their ownership period up to the date of closing. The buyer is responsible for the rest of the bill. So it's usually paid through the escrow account, or if they have no escrows, they pay it themselves. The complication usually arises when somebody is buying a property to live in it, but the property used to be a rental property, because taxes are assessed at two different rates in South Carolina. If it's an investment property, you're taxed at 6% times the millage rate, versus an owner-occupied, which is 4% times the millage rate. It's a significant difference. If it's taxed at the higher rate, we can't prorate based off of an estimate. That's not our practice. So if you look at paragraph 22 in the standard purchase agreement.
Yeah.
22, of course it is.
21 or 22. I think it's 22.
That's, it is my job to read them, and I read them a lot. I think that's the paragraph. But it calls for the buyers and the sellers to basically true up and make those prorations accurate based off of whatever the tax bill ends up being. So if we're prorating based off the old bill, because that's the best knowledge that we have, and the bill comes out and it's vastly different, up or down, the parties are responsible and have a legal obligation to make that correct. How often does that happen? Not usually. Yeah. But if somebody wants to make an issue of it, that's how that works. But the buyers have to pay their share of it at closing. So if sellers have to pay their share of it at closing. So when the buyers get their bill, if they bought it during the year, they have to pay the full amount because they've already gotten their credit from the sellers. So they've basically gone Dutch at closing. So if you close in June, sellers are giving the buyers a credit on the settlement statement, reduces their overall liability at closing, cash to close number, by that amount. So if they give them $1,000. Tax bill comes out and it's $2,000 for the second half of the year, then the buyers pay that full $2,000 tax bill because they've already got $1,000 credit from the seller at closing.
Got it.
And then how does the county come up with the number they come up with, the millage rate and all that?
We don't pay taxes in York County at the municipal level. You don't pay the school district's not its own taxing authority. The cities aren't their own taxing authority. The county is separate. Everything's one tax bill. It's all done at the county level. And that's based off of whether you're in the city limits or outside of city limits, whether you're in certain parts of the county or not, whether the use of the property is residential or if it's agricultural or if it's commercial. Whatever it's zoned as, it's going to be taxed at a different level, right? So you look at the tax zone that it's in, then you look at the tax rate, either 4% or 6%, for commercial or investment or owner-occupied, then times the millage rate for that area. That chart is available on the county website, yorkcountygov.com. Cool. And they update that once a year. Another easy way to do it, if you're looking at a piece of property, call your attorney. We'll do an estimate for you. Typically what we do is our practice is that we try to come up with an estimate based off of the purchase price as a point of sale state, without going to get technical there. Purchase price times whatever that is, to come up with an estimate what those taxes are going to look like for the buyer for the next tax year, so they have an idea of how that's going to affect their payment if they're going to escrow it.
Yeah. Okay. All right, Brian, you ready to talk about TV judges?
TV judges.
I changed my vote, by the way. I was heavy on Christina Aguilera. I think we were having some live problems.
Live issues here.
Carl Patterson said it's fading in and out, so we didn't get much participation. It stinks.
Well, I think it's because my battery's so low.
We didn't overhype it either. We didn't know advanced promo.
We should have.
So, favorite, or who would you have dinner with, TV judge?
Dinner? We said dinner,
we
right?
Said, we not agreed lunch. On dinner. Yes. Dinner. Okay. Dinner. You can get a couple glasses of wine, pick their brains.
Are they paying for it? Or
they're paying, for, paying it. They're, for it. They're rich.
Okay. I go first? And it says it has to be non-legal.
It doesn't have to be legal. It can be a TV judge.
TV judge. So a judge of some sort.
American Idol judge.
See, I would say probably Heidi Klum or Christina Aguilera, but then my wife would get mad at me. Yeah. So I'm going to go with a guy who I think would be fun, David Hasselhoff.
What do you do? America's Got Talent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't hassle the Hoff.
Don't hassle the Hoff. What about you, Brian?
Simon
Cowell?
Yeah, hilarious British guy. We could talk about The Office. We could talk about...
He's loaded, too. So.
He's rich. Yeah. He'll have a bunch of attractive ladies around.
What's your favorite Simon Cowell show?
Yeah, X Factor, Pop Idol, American Idol.
Honestly, American Idol, the first couple seasons when he was just making fun of people. everyone liked him for that.
What's the worst act you've ever seen? I think I would go with Howard Stern. I think that'd be a good one.
Okay.
Howard Stern would be a fun one.
You could almost live through him and be like, you know, tell me about when you interviewed, what's his name? Tell me about when you interviewed, what's her name? His name. So I think that'd be mine.
An interesting dude is actually, if you're going to restrict it to legal judges, like real judges.
I like how none of us picked a legal judge.
Right. So I was like, well, let's get back to that since, you know, lawyer. Andrew Napolitano, if you see him on TV every once in a while.
Yeah,
He's an interesting dude.
And his wife is something, isn't she? White House or something?
I don't know.
I don't know. I mean, he was a judge for a while, a sitting judge for a while, but he's got some interesting... He had a couple of interesting books that came out. I'm not saying I necessarily agree with him on everything, but you can tell he's a thinker, and I like that. That would be an interesting discussion. Anyway. as opposed to Judge Jeanine that Carl chooses. Yeah. She's browbeating into agreement.
Judge Judy just shaming you. Yeah. The people that come on Judge Judy are just, they're hilarious.
I couldn't deal with Judge Judy either. No.
Hey, waiter, excuse me, come here.
Hey. Although, talk about somebody else that's loaded. I hear she's, that show, she needs a ton of syndication. Yeah.
So, some other reality show judges, we've had Britney Spears, J-Lo as a judge.
I couldn't choose either.
Randy Jacks. Yeah. Judge Alex. You remember him? He's a judge.
I don't know.
He wasn't on a reality show, but he was Judge Mathis.
Judge Mathis is who I like. Fine.
They judge Faith Jenkins? I don't know her.
Got me.
Yeah.
Judge Toler? Lynn Toler? Oh, who's that? Who's this one?
Oh, that's Judge... what is her name? I know her. She's Who's this? Who is that? Judge...
She was on the People's Court.
Who is that? Yeah, she is. Judge...
I don't remember her name.
Judge People's Court.
It's Judge... the Latina woman. I guarantee people who are listening are like yelling at the phone.
Oh!
Hold on. Bear with us while we find this.
What is her name related to?
Go to... just go to news then. Or, not news, but...
People's Court Judges.
People's Court Judges. For crying out loud.
Gee whiz.
Put Latina. He didn't put Latina, by the way. He put woman. He
Marilyn Milan?
No, that's not her. It can't be her.
Yeah, she had her Latina
arbitrator.
Is it? Yeah, he got it. Marilyn Milan.
I didn't know. I just realized... Topless photo? Click on that link.
I'm sorry.
I disavow that comment.
My whole computer's gonna shut out. You've been no. Don't flag me.
Safe search.
This is my family's computer.
Are you ready to wrap it up?
Yeah, man. Dude, I appreciate you coming on. You're an awesome
Trey Nance. Where's your office located?
So the Rock Hill office is at 1236 Ebenezer Road. That is right on the Ebenezer Corridor in Rock Hill. Hmm. Right down the street from White Horse or South State Bank, depending on what your landmarks are. And the Charleston office is number 3 Broad Street. Second floor. Yeah.
What's your website? You guys do a lot online, so.
Yes. So the website for kind of what we're about, it's Nantz, NANTZ dot law. I know. Cool there, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's Nantz. It's NANTZ, like the sportscaster, dot law. Not dot com, not NantzLaw.com. It's Nantz dot law. You can also go to Facebook. Facebook, find us at Nantz Law. Facebook.com/Nantz Law. NANTZLAW.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks, buddy.
Cool.
Appreciate
you. Appreciate it.
That was fun, man. That was good.